Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. This show will first be broadcast on Wednesday, April 17th, 2024, on 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host, Ron Meniza. We're coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut. Comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcasts at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, and Buzzsprouts. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live and Instagram Live at Fran Storch, ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on this show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you have a medical condition, please consult with your physician. So, let's start with what's going on with Ron. Uh-oh. How's your legs?
Very weak. Yeah, very weak. Very weak.
Yes. And so, and you made a big decision on Friday, right?
Yeah, I made a big decision on Friday.
Yes. And what was that?
Not to use them anymore.
Right. So you're off the bike.
I'm now walking on my hands. Just kidding.
At least you have a sense of humor.
Well, I'm trying to have a sense of humor. Yeah. No, actually, I can't walk on my hands either. I'm really trying to use as little of my muscles as I can so that I can get them all to repair, because if I use my upper body too much, then I had the same fatigue problem there too. So it's just serious muscle fatigue. It seems to be the issue.
Yeah.
So best way to avoid that, don't use your muscles.
Right.
Which means no walking, no riding, no nothing.
Yeah.
And it's obviously no teaching of spin classes.
Right. Right. But you're teaching just off the bike.
I'm teaching, but I'm off the bike.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's good. That's good that you're able to do that at least. Yeah. And so the advantage there is that you're not using your muscles as intensely. So there's not as much intense need to build, rebuild and repair muscles. So everything can happen more slowly. And there's just not, you're giving your body less to do. So if indeed they are repairing, as we hope that they are, that they're going to repair faster just because you're using them less. Let's hope that that's the case. The whole idea is that, you've not been able to rebuild muscle cells after you use your muscles because your cholesterol is so low that you don't have cell membranes to rebuild it. We also don't know if you have some kind of an autoimmune antibody to the drug that you took, and it's causing inflammation that's going after your muscles. We're not quite sure about that, because you did not have an elevated creatine kinase, which tends to lead us away from the idea that you have myositis, which is inflammation of your muscles. You may simply have, low muscle mass, and you don't have enough muscle mass to do what you're asking your body to do, and the nerves can't connect to the muscle mass that isn't there, so that's why you get the cramps and the sensations like that. So one of the things that we did is you went ahead and got a hold of your PCP and your primary care physician, and he's going to have a visit with you. And I prepared some information from him with all of my theories about what could be going on, including we're giving you milk thistle to help rebuild your hepatocytes so that you'll get more hepatocytes that are not expressing LDL receptors, things like giving you the branched chain amino acids and the whey protein to help to rebuild your muscles, and all the different items that we offered you. And I made a big explanation of why we were offering each one and what my theories were and why it might be prudent to send you to another specialist just to make sure that you don't have some kind of degenerative muscular or neurological condition. I'm tending not to think that, just because I think you would be sicker and you would have constant, cramps and spasms and things like that, but you don't have that. You have it basically when you overuse your muscles, that's when it happens. Are you still getting cramps and spasms and stuff?
Yes, but not quite as bad as I was.
That's good. So, that's good news.
It was nightly before, and now it's back to, every once in a while.
That's good. So that's good. That's good news. That means that it may not be a neurodegenerative condition. It's just that your muscles need to rebuild, and it's just going to take time. Let's hope that that's all it is, because we're doing everything we can. He's sticking his tongue out at me. That's because Let's hope that that's all it is, because over time you're going to get better. And then if you do have to take a cholesterol-lowering medication, you'll probably go back to statins, because statins, you can have much more control over them. You'll do a much lower dose, and maybe not every day, if you have to take lipid-lowering medication at all. And, you know, there's controversy as to whether lipid-lowering medication really prevents atherosclerosis or not. But anyway, your cardiovascular practitioners are going to want you to be on something, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. But that would be the way to do it, because you have friends and colleagues who do it that way. They have they're on low doses, and they're on it not daily.
Yeah.
Did you find something there?
Well, I have something here that I had looked up before, and I thought you might be interested in hearing this.
I'm interested in hearing about it.
This is muscle-related adverse effects associated with PCSK9 inhibitors in a veteran population.
Okay.
And the study included 137 veterans, 24 patients, 17.5% developed a muscle-related AE while on PCSK9i.
AE is an adverse event.
Right.
Yeah.
In predefined subgroups studied, statin intolerance ranged from 68.1% to 100%. Ezetimibe intolerance ranged from 41.6% to 83.3%.
Whoa!
And both statin and ezetimibe
and ezetimibe
intolerance ranged from 36.3% to 83.3%.
Wow.
That is out of 137 people.
Yeah.
Don't tell me this stuff doesn't affect me. I am tired of hearing
it. Who's telling you it doesn't affect you?
Well, the medical people. Not your end of the spectrum. The ones who are educated primarily by the pharmaceutical companies.
But your actual practitioners are supportive, aren't they?
They're supportive now because they don't understand. You know, they see this guy that walked into the hospital 3 years ago, right, with symptoms that basically showed that I should not be alive.
Right.
And then miraculously they figured out that I had taken care of myself really well over the years from cardiovascular exercise. And then they watched me pop back and going in with results and feeling like, you know, really strong on my bike again. I mean, they know who I am now.
Yes.
Whereas before, they didn't have any idea.
Right.
You know, they've not really dealt with people like
no,
me.
They generally don't. Like, because most people are not like us.
Like my surgeon said, I've never worked on anyone like you before.
Right.
And this is a heart surgeon who does heart surgery
most people don't do what you do. And most people who do cardiovascular, you know, get a lot of exercise, don't have cardiovascular disease. But that's not entirely true, because it happens. It definitely happens. If you have genetics, it can still happen.
Okay, in this study, muscle-related PCSK9 AEs occurred in similar incident rate to that reported in previous clinical trials and exceeded the incidence rate reported in the prescribing information of irolimab and...
Alirumab. That's one of the PCSK9.
And the one I'm taking, which is
Evolocumab.
Mm-hmm. It appears that patients who had prior muscle-related intolerance to a statin and/or ezetimibe had a higher likelihood of developing muscle-related AE to a PCSK9.
Right.
So this kind of goes hand in hand with the problems I was having with the statins. And now, here it is.
So because you had problems with both statins and PCSK9 inhibitors, they have different mechanisms of action. They both do the same thing. They take LDL cholesterol out of circulation. They took too much out of your body. That's true. But the good news is, if you reacted to both, it's less... My concern is that, you know, evolocumab is a monoclonal antibody. It's a protein. Your body looks at it as a foreign protein and then can make antibodies to it, which gives you an autoimmune situation. And that concerns me. So if you reacted to both statins, and evolocumab, it may just be that you're reacting to the effects of too low cholesterol, which means that over time you should get better. That let's hope that that's all it is. It's just going to take a long time, and it's lousy because you have to like get off your bike for a while and not walk around too much and just not exert yourself too much, which you're not used to. And my concern too is that one of the ways that you control your mood is with exercise. And that you're going to, it's going to put you into a bad mood place, which means you may need to do more yoga and meditation and breathing, because those do help your mood. I'm here to attest to that. So anyway, all right, is there more?
Yeah, well, there's just, you know, other reports that are here that talk of incident rates from 32% to 36% for muscle-related AEs. Yes.
Right.
It's this stuff is, how do I put it? Not safe. Not right. I mean, if I can't continue to do my cardiovascular exercise, then I can't naturally take care of my cholesterol situation.
Right.
Because I do have a situation which needs to be attended to. But if I can't do it without the drugs, I'm not going to be a very happy guy.
No, of course not. Well, that's why they have to either figure out a way to give you drugs so that you have more control over it. And the answer is not because, you know, this company only has one dose of this drug.
Right.
And you put it in, that's the danger of taking a drug that you take once, you know, a couple times a month, once a month, every few months.
Right.
Once it's in your body, you're stuck with it for all that time.
And apparently I'm stuck with it for maybe up to 90 days.
Right. That it's still in your body.
Or more.
Right, so it could still be in your body. So
it's
the drug has to clear.
Still there now. I can tell you it has to be. There's no way I could not be feeling this bad.
Well, I mean, yes, there is. And that's simply that it lowered your cholesterol so much that your body's not able to rebuild your... You just have very few muscle cells and your muscle cells haven't rebounded. Yes, it is also possible that the drug's still in your body, in which case, if the drug's still in your body, it's still doing its thing. It's still making you...
Yeah.
It's still breaking down your PCSK9 so that you're still expressing lots of LDL receptors on your hepatocytes. So that so what you do with that is you keep taking that proteolytic enzyme that I gave you.
Right. I take all the stuff you gave me.
Right.
I just take it. That's all.
I gave him a proteolytic enzyme. Why? Because evolocumab
to people.
Yes, evolocumab is a protein, and so And the way that evolocumab is excreted from the body is by proteolytic enzymes, enzymes that break down proteins. So you're breaking it down with your own proteolytic enzymes anyway, but I gave you extra. And proteolytic enzymes are nice because they're anti-inflammatory, because inflammatory compounds in your body are proteins. So we're giving you that. All right. Is there more to this study?
No, it just said that they found that the muscle-related PCSK9 AEs occurred at a similar rate as those reported in previous clinical trials and exceeded the incidence rate reported in the prescribing information for both of the drugs.
So the prescribing information underreports how much this occurs.
Absolutely. And this is where I'm not happy. This is where I'm angry, is that I was not really given the information of, oh yeah, and this could occur. Because if I had found out that this that I'm going through right now could occur, I would have not taken this.
Right,
I would
have
gone for another alternative.
Right.
Because when I was on the statins and was having trouble with the statins and I backed off on them, within 2 to 3 weeks, I was 100% again.
Right.
And so I didn't have a long-lasting effect.
Right.
And I could deal with a couple of weeks, but... Yeah. But a couple of months, 3 months, no.
No, it's not reasonable.
I'm not so happy with that.
It's not reasonable.
And if I had known that in the beginning, I would probably have not taken it.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you are taking statins or you are taking evolocumab and you're or a PCSK9 inhibitor and you're having good results with it, that's great. But just be aware that this can happen. This is very interesting to us because this is Ron's ongoing saga and it's a special situation. And it's interesting to see how I naturopathically am approaching this and the various things that are going to be helpful to them. So there you go. Do you have more to say on this topic?
No, I think that was it. I had found this and I thought maybe you would be interested in hearing it.
I was interested in hearing that.
Yeah, because this is from the National Library of Medicine. It's a government
site. Yeah, it's from the NIH.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's from the NIH, right?
Yes, National Institutes of Health.
Generally a
reputable
source, not a, you know, kind of, well, we talk about medicine, but we're really not into medicine sort of site.
No, not absolutely. The NIH is considered
a fake news site, so
not at all. Yeah, the NIH is considered a reputable source for health information.
So if close to 20% of the participants of this particular drug are affected, why don't they tell you that?
I don't know, because it's only 20%, and you have an 80% chance of it not happening. That's why.
Yeah, but there should be a disclaimer of some sort that says that.
You would think.
Probably is in all the paperwork that that comes inside of one of those
boxes.
But
you took a chance. You thought that, oh, well, it's not going to happen to me, just like I did with the vaccine.
Right.
You know, it's not going to happen to me. Chances are good that it's not going to happen to me. And they were good that it wouldn't happen to me, because it doesn't happen to most people, even people who are high-level athletes. Most people who took the vaccines were fine. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people who did get bad reactions were high-level athletes or very busy people, people with a lot of stress. And that's who, people who are used to being very busy, that's a lot of who got hurt by the vaccines. And it's because they were already compromised. You know, they already had parts of their body that were compromised, neurological system, there was some compromise. So the vaccine could get in and bond to it. Really, there's a lot of receptors for COVID-19 and the vaccine, the spike proteins, they like to bond to the vagus nerve. So it gave people dysautonomia, and my autonomic nervous system was already hyped up because I was stressed.
And cardiac issues.
Yes, cardiovascular issues.
Large number of cardiac issues.
Yes, that's right.
And that just really upset me. But that's a bridge we crossed, and we have to continue walking forward.
I know. It's all we could do.
Just not fast or not uphill.
No, I know. Right. Faster uphill.
Yeah,
it's true.
I can't do that.
I, on the other hand, went for a long bike ride today.
Yesterday.
And felt good while I was doing it, and feel pretty good now. I've had teeny tiny bits of tremors, which I've been able to manage. But I went on this bike ride being concerned that it was going to aggravate my femoral nerve, you know, because I have this femoral neuralgia. Femoral nerve after the bike ride is much better. It's really much better. I'm sitting here and it's barely hurting at all. It's incredible.
Yep.
So getting on the bike for a long time seems to have fixed my femoral neuralgia. I'm guessing it was a circulation and a positional thing, that I just got a lot of circulation going for a long time. And I mean, it can't be that the nerve just calmed down all of a sudden. I'm assuming that it's positional, that I spent that much time in the saddle in that position and increasing circulation.
Right.
And that reset my spine so that whatever was sitting on the femoral nerve is no longer sitting on it. There's probably a piece of disc that was sitting on it, and it no longer is. It'll be very interesting to see what Dr. Scott says today. And so, by the way, last week I went to see Dr. Scott. Scott Gregoric was over in Mansfield, and it was very interesting. And he does this thing called chirocranial, and he does the activator method, and he uses an instrument, and he does some palpation and tests your body at various spinal levels before he adjusts that spinal level. So he did that. He did an assessment of me, explained what he was going to do, and then he tested me at every spinal level and adjusted every level that seemed to need adjusting. He also, when I talked to him about the fact that I had fallen, I had passed out when I'd had my reaction to the vaccine several years ago, he said, okay, well, I'm going to have to readjust your skull. So he did that too. He did some adjustments on my skull. And I definitely felt straightened out after I was done with Dr. Scott. It was very interesting. He's a very interesting guy. He's that really believes in what he does. He's passionate about his work. So I was very pleased. And so I'm going to have another appointment today. I'm looking forward to it. My appointment was during the eclipse, so I didn't get to go to Horse Barn Hill or the library or Vermont or anything like that. And I had made the appointment weeks earlier, not realizing that that was the day of the eclipse. So I didn't cancel the appointment. When I got there, a very lovely woman named Marianne happened to have a pair of glasses. She was patient. She had a pair of glasses. And I filled out the initial paperwork, and then by that point, it was 2:15, and it had started. So she let me use the glasses, and I saw a little tiny crescent taken out of the sun through the glasses. And then we went in, and we started our appointment. And at about 3:30, Dr. Scott's partner, Beth, who's the receptionist, she knocked on the door and said, "Hey, Marianne's back, and she's got the glasses at 3:30. So 3:30, that was peak, the peak of the eclipse. And so I said, "Scott, we got to run out. We got to go. It's historic. We have to run out." So he was in the middle of doing what he was doing, and I said, "No, we have to go. It's historic. We have to go look." So I made him go out, and we did, and I got to use the glasses again. And, you know, our part of Connecticut was not in the path of totality, but it was in the path of pretty much. So when you looked up, you could see that the when I looked through the glasses, most of the sun was blocked out. So it was a good 92-93%, but it wasn't enough to have darkness. I saw photos of people who went to Vermont and other places in the path of totality, and it really got dark. I mean, there was a little sliver of sunlight on the horizon, but it got dark for, I think, 2 minutes or something like that. So shout out to Kyone Wolf, who went up to Vermont. She had some photos on Facebook that were pretty incredible, where a video watching it get dark, and then it stayed dark for like 2 minutes, and then it got bright again. It just doesn't, it's a special thing, doesn't happen for very long. And so I was very grateful that this woman came. I was able to do my appointment, and I was able to see the eclipse. I just didn't get to participate in festivities. And I thought, well, I'll go over to the library when my visit is done. But I was done at 4:30, and by the time I got to the library, they had packed up. Gilson Square, same thing. So there was a lot of festivity. Ron went to the library, and he got a pair of glasses and got to see and saw some people there. Because most of the libraries in Connecticut had glasses and had events going on so that you could view the eclipse. So that was exciting.
And they played The Dark Side of the Moon.
No, they didn't.
They did. Oh, absolutely.
They played Pink Floyd.
They
That's
played
so cute.
Pink Floyd, yeah. That our new librarian, you know, the woman I met from South Carolina that came up here that's now our librarian in town.
Oh. Right.
Yeah, she had a whole thing
she
going
played,
on.
She had a playlist.
She had a playlist.
That's so cute.
She did. She had a playlist.
An eclipse.
Great.
So I'm sure that turn around every now and then.
Oh, yeah. That was there. Yep.
That one would be on it. And yep. I don't know what else.
There were lots.
That stuff about the sun.
Yeah.
But yeah, Dark Side
and
of the Moon.
And then at the end, the last song was Here Comes the Sun.
Of course. It's all right.
There you go.
Yep.
There you go.
Very nice. So that was fun. That was our week. So for me, I went on this 32-mile bike ride. I didn't go super fast. I went with friends, and we stayed together, and it was lovely, and my nerve is a lot better. Go figure. After I was done with the bike ride, I invited people back to the house. Nobody wanted to come because they had this and that and the other thing to do. They said, on another day I would come, but not today. So they didn't come. So it's okay. So I got home. And the good thing, that was unfortunate, but the good thing about that was that when I get home from a bike ride is I have to stretch. I have to use a foam roller. And I have to take my protein shake and do that all right away. So I was able to do all that. And I think that helped too. And then I got to lay around and relax for a while. I didn't have anything I really had to do. And then after that, I was able to take restorative yoga, which is the very easy yoga where you use a lot of props and there's no effort to it. And it's a lot of breathing and relaxing and stretching. So I did that, and that was great. And then after that, I took an Epsom salt bath. So things are good. It was a good thing. And it looks like next week, I don't know for sure, but next week, the long-range forecast is for rain on Saturday and no rain on Sunday. So it's going to be the same thing, that we're going to do our major bike ride on the Sunday, not the Saturday. I've been enjoying that because by Saturday, I can recover from the week a little bit. And then get into the bike ride on the Sunday. That works for me. So my plan is to ride some more on Wednesday. I did ride a little this morning. I got on the bike downstairs for 20 minutes. That's it. Plus did some weight training. And I intend to take it easy today. I'll get permission from Dr. Scott whether I should take yoga class this evening. So things are looking up. I've been taking my 5 milligrams lithium a day. I do think it makes me cheery. And I take, if I get a little shaky, I take extra lithium liquid. So I'm experimenting with that, and I think that's working. And then in terms of blood pressure, I'm taking a high dose of OPCs, oligomeric proanthocyanidolic, oligomeric proanthocyanidins. It's just a high dose of grapeseed extract. When the antioxidants help to strengthen your blood vessels and protect them from damage. So I'm taking that along with this Ayurvedic compound that has Rauwolfia in it, among other things. And Rauwolfia has beta blocker activity. And I also have 20 milligrams of propranolol to take if I want to. So propranolol is a beta blocker. It blocks your beta adrenergic receptors. And it's used to lower blood pressure. It's used to prevent migraines. It's used to help with heart rhythm. I haven't tried it yet. I probably will at some point. But you can take 20 milligrams is a very low dose. And people take it as needed to prevent panic attacks and to prevent, like if they're going to do public speaking or performing, they'll take 20 milligrams before that so that they don't get hyped up and panicky. And I had a panicky incident last week on Tuesday in the office. And it's so yuck. Like you're in the middle of seeing a patient and then you suddenly start to get these autonomic symptoms and autonomic outflow. So I have things on my desk that can help to stop that, like Rescue Remedy and L-theanine, which is an extract of tea that is calming, and I have ashwagandha on my desk, and so I have a bunch of things that I can take to calm myself down, and I can certainly do deep breathing, but I don't want that to happen. So it may turn into on some work days I'm gonna take a low dose of propranolol to keep myself calm. And meanwhile, I was just so happy that the bike ride went so well that I was able to ride that much and I had good energy and I felt good afterwards. I don't feel exhausted today. One of the things I think is helping with the exhaustion is because, you know, when you're treating chronic Lyme and, you know, chronic tick-borne illness, you can get very tired. Well, I've been taking adaptogens and I've been taking cordyceps and rhodiola and spirulina. And I think all of those are helping. I was taking Eleuthero, but I'm a little concerned that the Eleuthero could raise blood pressure, and I'm working on the blood pressure. So I want to take the Eleuthero because I like the way it makes me feel, but I don't know if it's too stimulating. So working on that, and so things are going well in that sense, and I'm hoping to get back into more exercise. So I'm hoping for that. Right. So let's talk about, speaking of helping with the autonomic nervous system, let's talk about something that we all love because it's delicious and it's habitual, and that is caffeine. We're going to talk about the side effects of too much caffeine. So caffeine, so here are some side effects of too much caffeine. Caffeine is generally safe in low to moderate amounts. Too much can cause unpleasant and maybe even dangerous side effects. The thing is that coffee and tea are incredibly healthy unless they're not, right? So most coffee and tea contains caffeine. There are numerous plants that contain caffeine. It's not just coffee, you know, Coffea cruda and Coffea arabic, you know, Arabian coffee. Coffee has caffeine. Camellia sinensis. So I keep telling people this, and I've said it on the show before, but people don't realize that green, black, and white tea are the same plant. And they are one plant. That when you say the word tea, when you say the word tea in English, you're talking about any plant that you put in water and you add hot water and you steep it or you boil it down and then you drink the liquid from doing that, except for coffee, which we call coffee, and chocolate, which we call hot cocoa or hot chocolate. But otherwise, we say tea for any herb, whether it's the tea plant or chamomile or linden or tulsi. Those are all, we refer them all to tea as tea. So there's either tea or there's herbal tea, even though T, Camellia sinensis, is an herb. So black, white, and green tea are all the same plant. White tea is when the leaves are first formed on the plant and they haven't opened up yet, and they have little white hairs on them that you can see. When you pick them at that time, they have compounds in them that they have at no other time in their life. So they have a lot of immune compounds. They have a lot of common compounds, and there's less caffeine in them than any other type of tea. When you let the leaves sit on the plant a little bit longer, they open up. They develop more caffeine in the leaves. And then if you pick them at that time and lightly steam them, now you have green tea and the leaves are green. If you take those same leaves and you grind them into a powder, now you have matcha, which you, when you, the difference between having a cup of green tea and having a cup of matcha is that you consume the powder. You actually can consume the powder instead of putting the tea into water and then taking the plant out once you're ready to drink it. You actually consume it. So you actually get more health benefits from it. You get more antioxidants and you get more of the polyphenols, the things that are helpful in tea. The only problem is there can also be more caffeine because you're consuming the whole plant instead of putting it in and taking it out. But that's green tea. And then if you take that green tea and you ferment it for a little bit, you get oolong tea, which you think of as Chinese tea. It's a little bit brown. It has a different flavor than green tea. And oolong tea is one that's been studied for fat loss, although all of the teas can be helpful for raising metabolism. And they're not going to solely, if you start drinking tea, you're not going to lose 20 pounds, but they can be helpful. And then if you take the tea plant and you ferment it for even longer, then you have black tea. And black tea can be different varieties. So the different teas can be different varieties. There's Assam and there's Ceylon and there's Orange Pekoe. And there's teas that come from different regions and that are prepared different ways and fermented different ways. And so they all have caffeine in them. The most caffeine is going to be in black. The longer you ferment it, the more caffeine you have. And then there's kukicha tea, twig tea, where not only do you partially ferment the plant and you include the twigs from the tea plant, and that has a distinctive flavor as well. It's got a little bit woody, little woody notes, and that's helpful too. Kukicha tea is popular in macrobiotic culture. So they all have lovely antioxidants in them. They all have the L-theanine in them. Theanine is calming, so then they all have caffeine in them. And the more caffeine happens in tea, the longer you ferment it. There is no caffeine in linden or oat straw or chamomile or tulsi or anything that we think of as herbal tea. There are other plants that are not tea or coffee or chocolate that have caffeine in them, like guayusa. So you can find guayusa tea in the health food store. So guayusa has caffeine in it. Mate also has, it's a different plant entirely, but it has caffeine in it. And there's a bunch of others too. I don't know off the top of my head, but just so you know that some teas have caffeine in them and some don't. So studies have shown that it's safe for most people when you have low to moderate amounts of caffeine, but high doses can have unpleasant and even dangerous side effects. And there are genetics and how fast you metabolize caffeine and how well you tolerate it. I am a lightweight. A little goes a long way. Ron is not. Ron can drink coffee all day and go to sleep. I cannot. I have to induce my caffeine breaking down enzymes and so that I can have at least a little bit. And if I drink too much, I will be wired and my blood pressure will go up and I'll feel jittery and I won't feel well. So here's some side effects of too much caffeine. Caffeine definitely can increase alertness. So caffeine, one of the ways that it works is it blocks the effects of adenosine, which is a brain chemical that makes you feel tired. It also triggers the release of adrenaline or epinephrine, which is a fight or flight hormone that's associated with increased energy. When you have caffeine at higher doses, you can have these effects in a more pronounced way, which can lead to anxiety and nervousness. And caffeine-induced anxiety disorder is one of four caffeine-related syndromes, and it's in the DSM, the Diagnostic and Statistics Manual of Mental Disorders, which is published by the American Psychiatric Association. When you take very, very high doses of caffeine, like 1,000 milligrams or more a day, It can cause nervousness, jitteriness, and similar symptoms in most people. Where ES, even a moderate intake can lead to similar effects if you're sensitive to caffeine. Modest doses can also increase your breathing and increase your stress levels when you consume it in one sitting. There was a study with men who found that those who ingested about 300 milligrams of caffeine had more than double the stress of those who took a placebo. So cortisol levels were similar between regular and less frequent caffeine consumers. So it may have the same effect on stress levels regardless of whether you drink it habitually. So if you drink it sometimes or if you drink it a lot, it can still increase your stress. And the content in coffee is highly variable. So if you have a grande coffee at a certain very popular chain, there's about 310 milligrams of caffeine. I could not handle that. Whereas I can get a latte, there's a prepared latte that I can get at the store that has 40 milligrams of caffeine. And what I'll do is I won't drink it all at once. So I get, 10 to 20 milligrams at a time that I can handle. If you notice that you feel nervous or jittery, it's a good idea to look at your caffeine and cut it back. So one of the things I always ask my patients who, especially if they're anxious or they have high blood pressure, how much caffeine are you consuming? Are you drinking tea? Are you drinking coffee? Oh, we forgot about cola. Cola has caffeine in it too. So your Coke and your Pepsi, and doesn't matter the brand. If it's cola, it's going to have caffeine in it. So caffeine can cause insomnia. Surprise, surprise. It can help you stay awake, which is a reason people like to take it, but too much can make it so it's hard to get restorative sleep. If you have a higher caffeine intake, it increases the amount of time it takes to fall asleep. I'll tell you that right now. If I'm like, all right, today I'm going to have a nice big cold brew coffee, I'm going to be staring at the clock until 2 a.m. And fortunately I eventually get to sleep, but it's bad. You may not realize that too much caffeine is interfering with your sleep if you underestimate it. People are like, but I only drink it in the morning. And I'm like, okay, you're telling me that you can't sleep and you're putting a substance into your body that stimulates you. That doesn't make sense. All right. And so then I have to talk about one of the basic naturopathic principles, which is removing obstacles to cure. And so removing obstacles to cure means, and here's my analogy, say there's some train tracks and the train is coming. One way to approach medicine is to stand on the train tracks, have the train come, have the train hit you, and then get care for the fact that the train hit you. Or another way to manage that is, you know that the train is coming, get off the tracks. So when people say, well, I'm just having one cup of caffeine in the morning, or I love my coffee, this is my favorite one, don't take my coffee away from me. I'm like, look, I can't take anything away from you. I'm not your mother. I can't do that. It's what I'm giving you advice, and you can do what you want with it. I'm giving you information, and it is up to you to do your own healing. I don't heal you. You heal you. If you are standing in front of the train and you're getting all beat up, I can give you arnica and I can give you curcumin and boswellia and all kinds of anti-inflammatories to help with your injuries. It wouldn't have been easier if you weren't on the tracks in the first place. So that's my analogy. Removing obstacles to cure means that if there's an obstacle in the way of your healing, remove the obstacle. And if you can't sleep and you're consuming caffeine, you have to figure out, is there a dose of caffeine that you can comfortably intake and have the kind of night's sleep that you want? And you have to figure that out. And I'm not going to tell you never have caffeine again. I'm just going to say, look, if you consume caffeine, then you will probably not sleep as well. And it doesn't matter what time of day you take it, because it all depends on how fast you're metabolizing that caffeine. It doesn't make sense to take a stimulant if you're having trouble sleeping. So, and people don't realize that that's what's going on, because people think of caffeine, coffee, tea, chocolate, they think of it as food. They think of it as a habit. They think of it as something they do, and they don't put together that it's a drug, and it affects, like we said, it raises your epinephrine, and it will, it blocks your adenosine, so you feel less sleepy. So, So coffee and tea are the most concentrated source of caffeine. Remember, it's in soda, cocoa, energy drinks. And that's right, it's in energy drinks too, and it's in some medications as well. So if you take Excedrin for migraines, one of the ingredients in Excedrin is caffeine because it helps to constrict your blood vessels so you have less flow into your brain, causing the pain. And it's, as I said, it's in soda. It's not just in cola. They add it. It's not naturally in Mountain Dew, but they add it to Mountain Dew. And so there are some brands of soda that have caffeine added to them. And then, of course, energy drinks often have caffeine, even if they don't have a plant in them that gives you caffeine. A lot of them do. Some of them have, like Celsius, for example, has green tea in it. But, something like Red Bull has caffeine as an external ingredient. There's no plant in it that has caffeine in it. So you have to be careful. If you take energy shots, you can get those little energy shots. It can have as much as 350 milligrams of caffeine, and you can get drinks that have over 500 milligrams of caffeine. So the amount of caffeine you can consume without affecting your sleep will depend on genetics and other factors. So for me, it will also depend on how much exercise I got that day. So I can consume more caffeine on a day that I've gone on a 32-mile bike ride than I can on a day where I've ridden very little or not at all. And so caffeine will affect me more on those days. And I really have to moderate. But like a whole cup of coffee, I'm asking for it, even if I have gone on a bike ride. And so I do things like, and it drives around crazy, I'll go to a cafe and buy, an amount, like I did that the other day. I got cold brew, and I love the taste of cold brew, a nitro cold brew. Give me a good nitro cold brew. But I got it in a to-go container, and I sipped on it, and I put it in the fridge, and I'll drink it over a number of days. I also find that putting creamer in my coffee will slow the entry of caffeine into my system. And I like to use healthy creamers. I like brands that are, because I'm mostly off dairy, I don't use dairy creamer. I use creamer that's made from nuts and coconut and that doesn't have sweetener in it. So I add my own sweetener, maybe a drop of agave or honey or maple syrup or even coconut sugar. And I also dump a lot of cinnamon into my coffee, and that way I don't need as much sweetener. And I recommend that if you want to sweeten something and you don't want to use a lot of sugar, or you want to reduce the amount of sweetener that you need, use cinnamon to taste, because cinnamon tastes sweet. And I love the taste of cinnamon in coffee, and whether the coffee is black or the coffee is has creamer in it. But it's true, if you put fat in your coffee, it will enter into your system. That's why people do butter coffee or the Bulletproof coffee, because the caffeine enters into your system more slowly. So there was a study on how the timing of caffeine ingestion affects sleep. It was only on 12 healthy adults. They gave them 400 milligrams either 6 hours before bedtime, 3 or immediately prior to bedtime. Both the time it took all three groups to fall asleep and the time they spent awake at night increased significantly for all three groups. So the ones who had coffee 6 hours before bedtime. Now, if you go to sleep at 10 o'clock, maybe you shouldn't have coffee at 4. One of the things we suggest to people who consume caffeine is, at the very least, cut off your caffeine consumption at a reasonable hour. And you have to figure out what that hour is. If it's small amounts, you may be able to get away with 3 or 4 o'clock. Some people, I have patients who say to me, I cut off my caffeine at noon, which is smart. That works for some people. But all three groups who took this 400 milligram dose of caffeine, all three groups had trouble falling asleep and spent more time awake. So just know, if you have insomnia and you're consuming caffeine and you want to go to sleep, may not be a good idea to consume caffeine, and you have to figure out the amount of caffeine, and it may be none. So people have digestive issues when they come, when they consume caffeine sometimes. I mean, not always, but sometimes. Many people find that a morning cup of coffee helps with a regular bowel movement. And if you have a regular bowel movement and there's no problem with it and you feel good afterwards, then it's fine. It has been attributed to the release of gastrin, which is a hormone your stomach produces that speeds up activity in your colon. Decaffeinated coffee does the same thing. Decaf coffee also stimulates gastrin release. So large doses of caffeine can give you loose stool. If you drink too much coffee, remember you having the loose stool the other day? Maybe you had too much coffee. Some people can even get diarrhea. For many years, coffee was believed to cause stomach ulcers. There's a study of over 8,000 people didn't find any link. It doesn't actually cause ulcers. On the other hand, some studies, I think it does potentiate the release of stomach acid because, you know, you'll feel some people who are sensitive will have a little more acid release. On the other hand, some studies suggest that caffeinated beverage may worsen gastroesophageal reflux in some people. And that seems to be true of coffee. I think it's because it's irritating. It's not irritating to everyone. It's irritating in me sometimes, especially if I have too much and if I have it too many days in a row. One way to mitigate that is if you're drinking coffee and you tend to get heartburn from it, is to drink water at the same time. Have a glass of water and be drinking water while you're consuming the caffeine. And that'll wash down any reflux that might happen. So there was a study where they gave healthy adults caffeinated water and they found that it caused a relaxation of the muscle the lower esophageal sphincter. It actually relaxed the lower esophageal sphincter. So that does that in some people. Since it has major effects on digestive function, you may want to cut back if you're having issues. All right. Muscle breakdown. Really? Rhabdomyolysis is a very serious condition where you break down muscle tissue. Muscle tissue is broken down and you dump myoglobin into the bloodstream. And then the myoglobin, if you actually have rhabdomyolysis, you have this myoglobin dumped into the bloodstream and it can back up in your kidneys and cause kidney failure. It's very dangerous. There are reports of rhabdomyolysis related to excessive caffeine intake. It is rare. So I probably wouldn't ever get there because I can barely finish a cup of coffee. There was a case of a woman developing nausea and vomiting and dark urine after drinking a liter of coffee with 565 milligrams of caffeine. And that's not a lot. That's a lot, but it's not as much as it could have been. She did recover. Those are symptoms of rhabdomyolysis. And 565 milligrams is a huge dose to consume in a short amount of time. And one of the things you do is if you consume caffeine regularly, you induce, even so I'm a slow metabolizer, I will induce my CYP1A2, that's the name of the enzyme that breaks down caffeine. I will induce it and create more of that enzyme if I consume some caffeine. If I don't consume any caffeine for a very long time and then have some, I don't have as much CYP1A2 around. And that is why if people are using caffeine, one of the things caffeine does is it makes you, it increases your, or lowers your perceived exertion threshold. So if you have caffeine on board, you can work out at a higher level and your perceived exertion is lower. You feel better when you're working out at a higher level when you consume caffeine. That effect is enhanced in people who don't consume a lot of caffeine. So if they don't consume caffeine every day and then they have a hit of caffeine because they're about to do a workout, they're going to get a better effect than people who drink coffee all the time. And that makes sense because they're not breaking it down as much. Somebody like you, Ron, you have your very fast metabolizer and your CYP1A2 is very active. It's active anyway because you're a fast metabolizer, but it's also going to be active because you consume caffeine all the time. Caffeine can definitely be habit forming. It triggers certain brain chemicals like the way that cocaine and amphetamines do, but it doesn't cause classic addiction, but it also can cause psychological and physical dependency, to wit, don't take my coffee away from me. There was a study with people who consumed high, moderate, or no caffeine. They participated in a word test after going without it overnight, and only high caffeine users showed a bias for caffeine-related words and had strong caffeine cravings. So if you weren't, you wouldn't crave it as much if you didn't use it so much. And how frequently you use caffeine plays a role in dependency. When they gave out questionnaires to people after 16 hours of without using it, daily users had more headaches, fatigue, and other withdrawal symptoms. Even though it doesn't cause true addiction, if you regularly drink it, there's a good chance you'll become dependent on its effects. So high blood pressure, this is an interesting one. Overall, caffeine doesn't seem to increase the risk of cardiovascular disease or stroke in most people, but it has been shown to raise blood pressure in several studies because it stimulates your nervous system. And elevated blood pressure is, of course, a risk factor for heart attack and stroke because it can damage arteries over time and it restricts flow of blood to your heart and brain. But the caffeine's effect on blood pressure seems to be temporary and have the strongest impact in people who aren't used to consuming it. So high caffeine intake will also raise your blood pressure during exercise in healthy people as well as in those with somewhat elevated blood pressure. So paying attention to the dose and timing of caffeine is important, especially if you already have high blood pressure. Caffeine can increase your heart rate. So it stimulates you. It can cause your heart to beat faster. It may also lead to an altered heartbeat rhythm, even atrial fibrillation, which has been reported in young people who consume energy drinks that have a lot of, high doses of caffeine in it. It doesn't seem to occur in everyone, and some people with heart problems may be able to tolerate large amounts of caffeine with no effect. And there was a study in patients with heart failure, and they gave them 100 milligrams of caffeine, and their heart rate rhythms remain normal. So it does that in some people and it doesn't in others. It's interesting. I know for me, if I do too much caffeine, I'll get, my heart will like skip a beat. And I'm assuming I have either premature ventricular contractions or premature atrial contractions. I get those once in a while. And if I consume a lot of caffeine, I know that I'll consume a lot. If I have exercised for a long time and I'm dehydrated, don't have enough electrolytes on board, then I'll tend to get those more. And if I relax and drink lots of water and get my minerals in, then I won't. Coffee, tea, and other caffeinated beverages are supposed to boost energy levels, but they can have the opposite effect because you'll get rebound fatigue after the caffeine leaves your system. And there was a study on caffeinated energy drinks. It increases alertness and mood for several hours. People tend to be more tired the following day. If you want to maximize caffeine's benefits on energy and avoid fatigue, you want to consume moderate amounts. Like there's too much is too much and too little, you won't get the effect. So you want to do somewhere in the middle. Urinary frequency. So increased urination is a common side effect of high caffeine intake. Caffeine does stimulate the bladder. You may notice that you need to urinate frequently when you drink more coffee or tea than usual. And so research that looks on the compound's effects on urinary frequency has focused on older people or those with overactive bladder or incontinence. And there was a study that found that middle-aged people with overactive bladders who had 2 milligrams of caffeine per pound, which is 4.5 milligrams per kilogram, experienced significant increases in urinary frequency and urgency. So for a 150-pound person, if they consume 300 milligrams, they're going to have some urgency. I definitely get more urgency from drinking caffeine, and I hear that all the time from other people. Oh, the coffee just hit me. I got to use the bathroom. So there was a large study that looked at the effects of high caffeine intake on incontinence in more than 65,000 women without it. Those who consumed more than 450 milligrams daily had a significant increase of incontinence compared to those who had less than 150 milligrams. If you drink a lot of caffeinated beverages and feel like you're having more urinary frequency and urgency, you might want to cut back and see if it improves. So light to moderate intake of caffeine can have impressive health benefits in a lot of people. On the other hand, if you consume very high doses, it can lead to side effects that interfere with day-to-day living and might cause a lot of health issues. Responses vary from person to person. And if you want to get the benefits of caffeine without the side effects, conduct an honest assessment of your sleep, energy levels, and other factors. So that's the thing about too much caffeine. All right. And so I think next week we will start with energy drinks. I'm just going to give a very brief caution about allergies. The pollen is rising and rising and rising. Have you been having allergy symptoms?
Yes.
Yeah.
Always.
So what are your allergy symptoms?
Runny nose, congestion, drippy eyes, drippy everything. Yeah. Drippy everything, basically.
So just be aware that the pollen is definitely out there. This time of year, we're looking at juniper and cedar more because we don't have leaves yet, but we are starting to get flowers. So we're getting flowers on the trees. Eventually, we are going to get pine pollen, and we're going to get maple pollen and oak pollen. And, you know, those days where the wind blows and you see a big yellow cloud come out of the trees, and then you go out to your car and you can write your name in pollen or in relief of pollen on your car. So that's happening. So be aware of that. HEPA filters inside your home are a good idea. I like HEPA filters because they tend to pull pollen and dust and mold out of the air. Cleaning your nose regularly is a good idea, whether you want to use a neti pot where you're pouring saline into your nose in one side out the other. That'll help to flush things out. You can also use nasal sprays. I'm not a big fan of steroid nasal sprays. If you must, you must. But remember that steroid nasal sprays are suppressive to the immune system, and they also can eat away at the tissue inside your nose. So if you can use saline, or you can use something that has xylitol and grapefruit seed extract and saline in it, that can be helpful. And you can also use, I have a nasal spray that actually has fulvic acid in it, so it makes it so that stuff doesn't stick to the inside of your nose. So it's going to pull out pollen, pollutants, bacteria, viruses. So it helps to keep your nose clear. My nose is pretty clear. So that's helpful. Yes. And then there's natural things that you can take for respiratory allergies. And I'm a big fan of eyebright and nettles. So maybe we'll go into this a little bit more next week. We'll talk a little bit more about respiratory allergies because it's just that time of year. And I just want to remind you about it. All right. So you have, I'm going to sign off now because we're out of time. So you have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host, Ron Meniza. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, and Spotify. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live and Instagram Live episode at Fran Storch, ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of the station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS stores, and WHUS.org.